Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing today?
Good, good, good. Beautiful day out there. I got to go get a haircut.
Yeah, that's what you said. I was surprised.
Shots fired. Actually, when you get bald, when you're not bald, you think, oh, that'd be terrible. And then when you go bald, you just think, oh, whatever. Like,
busy street gathers no moss. That's what a bald friend once said to me. And my dad was bald young, so I've been making bald jokes my whole life. It's nothing personal.
It wouldn't even matter if it was, because I don't even care. It's coming to about half of the guys out there, so whatever.
Yeah.
But you do need to get your hair cut, because it, like, when you get the few strands of hair left on your head, when they start to get long, it's kind of gross. So I just like the old clean shaven look. All righty, Bruce, I understand in oil country today, you decided to take an oil tanker head on in a car.
Yeah, I'm happy to be alive at this moment. I got hit by a big oil tanker, gas tanking truck on the White Mud Freeway.
Oh, on the White Mud.
That sounds a lot worse than it is. Basically, he was merging into my lane, and I was coming off a exit ramp or entry ramp into his blind spot, and he didn't see me. Took the mirror right off of my driver's side window. So,
were you both merging into the same lane?
I was coming down the exit ramp just by Southgate Mall, and he was trying to turn up on 111th Street. And he just didn't see me. Schmush. And I swerved but a second too late to save my mirror, but at least I saved my life, my wife's life. So I'm actually pretty happy.
And
all the pain in my butt today, I'm happy.
Yeah, and 98% of your car, it sounds like you saved too, right?
Yeah, just the mirror. It's just tricky to drive without that driver's side mirror, though.
I mean, you
get home was no fun.
Yeah, you can take off one of those mirrors, just back it out of the garage. And I'm not saying how I learned that, Bruce.
Okay. I won't ask.
All right. Today is the Matt Benning Keep, Hold, or Fold podcast. This is a series of podcasts we do on all the Oilers players, although we might not do McDavid and Drysdale quite the same way, because it would be stupid. Where we look at whether the Oilers should keep them, hold, and maybe trade them later this summer, or fold and actively look to move this player. Mm-hmm. So, Bruce, we're going to stick with our usual two good things, bad things, and numbers format for the podcast. Let's start out, with your good thing about Matt Benning.
Sure. My good thing about Matt Benning is how quickly and easily and cheaply he became available to the Edmonton Oilers, signed as a unrestricted free agent out of college, former Boston Bruins draft pick, which to me was appropriate revenge for Boston getting a draft pick for the rights to Peter Chiarelli. So I think of Matt Benning as being that pick.
Is it a second-round pick?
That was a second-round pick. He was actually taken with, I believe, a sixth-rounder, 175th overall in 2012, the kind of pick the Oilers never seem to make that turns into a real player. But Matt Benning did. And, you know, they signed him that summer right after August 15th. And he played two games in Bakersfield. So you might say they rushed him to the NHL, or you might just say he was sort of ready for the lower echelon of the NHL in a hurry. What they didn't do, at least they didn't overdo, was try and push him into the top four before he was ready. And I'm not sure he's ready yet to this day, but I do know he's an NHL caliber player that came at zero acquisition cost and relatively little minor league development cost. He was basically a plug and play.
Yeah, and he has, because he's an NHL player, he's got some trade value. He's mm-hmm. 24 years old. He's got a cap hit of $1.9 million, and he's mm-hmm. a solid third-pairing defenseman. So those are all good things about him. My good thing was he's a funny player in that he's a fairly consistent performer in that third-pairing role, but he's kind of up and down as each season goes. But in the second half of last season, he was quite a strong player in the third-pairing role. In that role, as NHL D-men go, he really kind of – I don't know, aced it might not even be too strong a term, you know, that assignment, which is not the toughest assignment. It's the easiest assignment for NHL defensemen. but he did well in it. He got pucks on net with a shot. I think his puck moving improved somewhat from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. I think he got a little bit more adept at moving the puck quickly and right on to players' sticks. And his defensive positioning was exceptional in that role, at least. He rarely got beat in that role in the third pairing. So good for him for coming on strong as the year went on. I think he changed a lot of people's minds. I think with his lack of progress from third pairing to second pairing, he'd be a natural guy to move out. Mm-hmm. But that improvement kind of keeps him, and the fact he plays on the right side, of course, kind of keeps him in the conversation for the Oilers for next season. Bruce, what is your bad thing about Mr. Matt Benning?
Yeah, it's an incomplete thing to this point, but I kind of had high hopes from his first year or first 2 years that he might gradually evolve into a top four defenseman and be that wonderful thing of a relatively cheap, homegrown, so to speak, at least, player that comes up strictly through your team. And if you don't count his time in university when he was the Bruins draft choice, but since he turned pro, he's been with the Oilers. But he had a chance to seize that job at both the beginning of last season and this past season. And both times he struggled with the competition in the second pairing. And I'm not saying he's never going to be able to do that, but I'm just saying that aspect is taking time. And when you only have one other natural right-shooting defenseman ahead of him, of course, the hope is that he will become that top four quickly. And I guess sort of related semi-bad thing was they paid him last summer when they renewed him $1.9 million, as if they thought he was maybe ready to make that step. So as third-pairing defenseman goes, he's not particularly cheap anymore.
No, you kind of want, especially when you're paying your top guys so much, you kind of want your third pairing defenseman to earn more in the $1 million, mm-hmm. in the $1 million range. And the Oilers may be really attracted to that kind of idea.
That said, the current third pairing has Matt Benning $1.9 million for one more year and Andre Sekera $5.5 million for two more years. So if you really want to single out where the hit on the payroll is, I think it's obvious.
Yeah, I don't think there's any real argument to keep Sekera around, Bruce, if he's just going to be a defense, like a third-pairing D-man.
Yeah. To his credit, Benning's game settled down dramatically after he and Sekera were paired together, and they were really effective as a duo. And you talked about Benning's puck movement. Well, part of that was he knew if he could get the puck to Sekera that good things were then going to happen with it.
Yeah, kind of like Chris Russell, right? Andre Sekera mm-hmm. makes a lot of good things happen. Mm-hmm. On the ice, which is why I'm in the definite keep camp with Sekera. I think I mm-hmm. was, at least.
I think you were, yeah.
I think I was, and I am. Mm-hmm. I'm strongly in the keep camp for Andre Sekera because I believe he can play a top four role for the next 2 years for the Oilers, and you do not get rid of that player. So Matt Benning, Bruce, I don't like his puck movement. He's not a strong passer of the puck. He's not a strong skater with the puck. I mean, can you even think of him skating with the puck? He doesn't do it. Maybe he's smart enough to know that he shouldn't.
Right.
That he should just try to move it. But he's not particularly adept at kind of finding an extra time for himself and making that quick move in the defensive zone to shake the opposing forechecker, give yourself that extra second or two and make that pass. He doesn't do that very well either. He was struggling, especially early in the year, just to hit players consistently with the puck. There was way too many passes from Matt Benning that went just awry. You know, would go shooting off into the icing or to the opposing team. And that's the real frustration. Because when he came up, Bruce, in that first year, he really did progress. By the time the 2017 playoffs were over, he was one of the players that everybody in Oil Country was bullish about because mm-hmm. of the way he stepped up. He looked like he was going to be a fantastic, well, not fantastic, but he looked like he was going to be a solid second pairing defenseman. And he played that way for a handful of games in the playoffs. And we haven't seen that player since then. And I think I mean, there's some speculation it's due to injuries, concussions, and other injuries, which have taken taken him some time to recover from. So maybe we should, maybe that's why he got better as the second half went along. I mean, he is only 24. This is my reluctance in giving up on the player. Oh, he's so young, and he might, what if he became that player next year that we saw on the playoffs and actually was able to play as a good second pairing defenseman? I mean, I'm not counting on that anymore.
I don't
say it's not a possibility. He could easily be traded to another team, and that's who he could be.
I originally had hopes that he was going to be have a Jared Spurgeon type trajectory where nobody knew who the hell he was for a while, and then he just keeps getting better and better, and all of a sudden he's a staple in your top four. Well, I've downgraded those expectations somewhat, for one, because Jared Spurgeon is a hell of a player. But that's you want to get somewhere in your team. You want to find that defenseman that just comes out of nowhere and fills a vital role on your team. And of the guys currently on the Oilers team, he's really that guy in terms of where his background is. I mean, they had two high draft choices in there, two prominent expensive free agents, and one very prominent expensive trade acquisition, and then Matt Benning. That's their six. So he's the guy that sort of was and still is under the radar a little bit.
Okay, what is your number?
Okay, my number has to do with him being an outscorer in all 3 years of his career, which is really what you want on a third pairing. He's now plus 24 on his career, and for those who hate plus minus as the worst statistic ever composed, we'll do it this way. Five versus five, where you get rid of all the shorties and the empty netters that do corrupt plus minus. He's outscored, or the Oilers have outscored their opposition by 22 goals over 3 years with a margin, you know, positively in the solidly in the plus side of the equation in 3 out of 3 years. On your third pairing, I mean, basically you want those guys to break even. They do get a little bit of softer competition, but if they can outscore, that's golden.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical always of, like, when it comes to statistics, Bruce, I think the players whose statistics are most impacted by far by usage, by who they play against on the ice, is defensemen. And Adam Larsson, his numbers are hugely impacted in a negative way because he faced the toughest competition this year on the Oilers' defense. And I'm going by the numbers by Darcy McLeod's Puck IQ site. So Adam Larsson played 35% of his minutes against the toughest competition. Matt Benning played just 24% of his time against the toughest competition. And again, I just think it has a dramatic impact on your results. Those top forwards are so much better with the puck and making defensemen look bad in terms of and executing offensive plays than the bottom guys. The bottom guys at the NHL level have a real struggle executing in the offensive zone. They just don't have that skill. So it's way easier for Matt Benning to be on the ice for a positive plus minus this year than it was for an Adam Larsson. And when we look at their individual contributions to goals for and against, when you break it down and you just look at the plays where they actually had an impact rather than they were just on the ice, Larsson and Benning had the, according to our work, Bruce, this year, they were tied for goals for and against plus minus.
Both, that's a stark contrast to the official.
Both near the bottom.
Plus minus.
Yeah, both near the bottom for the team. Mm-hmm. Both. So Sekera had the best number, and he had a really good number. But again, he was against the weakest competition of any Oilers defenseman. Russell did second best, then Klefbom, then Nurse, and then Larsson and Benning are tied. There's not a lot separating them, I should add. But there's enough that that it's significant distance between Sekera and Benning. And I'm just, put it this way, Bruce, if they trade him, I'm not going to be unhappy, but I'm not, I won't be glad. I won't be unhappy. I'll just get it.
Right.
But so let's move now into the whole, hold. I guess I'm in the hold camp.
Yeah.
This isn't a player that you're looking necessarily to move, but they need help at forward. He has some value as a trade asset.
Yep.
The only real downside, I think, of moving him, if he was on the left side, you'd be moving him for sure. because there's all kinds of players. I think Caleb Jones is right now a better player than Matt Benning. And I think Caleb Jones on the right side in the bottom pairing, or Evan Bouchard in the right side in the bottom pairing, may be a better player already, probably a better player already than Matt Benning. So unless Matt Benning steps up, which is possible, I think these guys are already kind of equal with him, if not better bets for next year. So you know, with Jones out at me moving him to his offside, but I'd be open to that. Where are you?
I'm definitely in the hold camp, and I am with most of the players. I, you know, they can't stay married to all these guys where the team has gone, been spinning its wheels for all but 1 year. And if the right trade comes along, and one trade that was bandied about a few times last year, and it was a trade that made sense, was Matt Benning to Toronto for Connor Brown. And they're both, Brown is about a $2 million winger, Benning a $2 million defenseman. So the money was a wash. And Toronto was having issues on defense, specifically right defense. And Oilers, as we all know, have a real paucity of NHL caliber wingers, of which Connor Brown is one. You know, he's no superstar, but he's a player. And he could help the team, you know, with penalty killing. And he'd score some, and it would depend on who he played with. He might score quite a bit. He used to play with Connor McDavid back in junior, so there's that. So if a trade, you know, a hockey trade comes along, yeah, sure. You're just sort of getting rid of the guy to make room for someone else. You know, you've invested now 205 NHL games in this player. And he's now, you know, getting to the point where he's a veteran NHLer and becoming, I think, a little bit more of a reliable player. And that should only continue to grow with one or two more years in the NHL. So I'm reluctant to, you know, just say, well, he's not good enough. Let's get a younger, cheaper, better guy in there. Because until that younger, cheaper guy has his own 200 NHL games, he's probably not going to be much better, if any.
All right, Bruce, let's leave it there.
Sure.
Thanks for talking today.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.